You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
You've heard from him a few times the last few weeks. Fun talking to him all about what's been going on with The Last Dance. He's Rich Kleiman of 35 Ventures. What's up, Rich?
What's up, my man? How are you?
I'm good. How you doing? So take me into, your last two episodes last night, your take on the last two episodes last night. I saw you tweet about it afterward. So your big takeaways from not just the last two episodes, but also the entire series.
Well, definitely sad it's over. I found it to be pretty bittersweet. And I did tweet that as well. I was saying today about this, like, feeling of, like, after your team wins even a Super Bowl, like, you're excited, but then you're kind of like, damn, I don't get to watch a game next week. And I felt that kind of adrenaline rush the last five weekends and something to really get excited for. So I'm pretty depressed that it's over. That being said, I found it unbelievably entertaining, except for a few moments where I had to relive some moments that were painful. And then this last two episodes, I was like ready to run through a wall, man. I was so motivated and inspired. I really realized what set him apart, at least from my perspective, that as a fan growing up, as a kid growing up, watching him compete and just be MJ, I didn't have the sophistication at that point to realize it. And to watch this and learn that was incredible.
The making the list apparently was not very hard to do, as we saw. To see somebody that easily motivated and also just needing it, Rich, seeing somebody like that was fascinating for me, just because there was that need to always find a little something to give him that edge.
Yeah, and it's not manufactured, like starts manufactured or amplified to get him so motivated, but the emotion and the like intensity behind the storyline that he put into his mind to get him so worked up to compete and dominate at that level was so real. Like, and it could be anything, you know, whether it's like something that Byron Russell said to him in the off season one time, like, that's insane. Like
George Carl not saying hello at a restaurant.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, be able to carry that with you too. And I saw Mark Jackson on the Get Up this morning. He was talking about how there was less for Michael Jordan, the greatest athlete in the world at that time in his life, to have to engage in than what the biggest superstars of today have to, that keeps them and their focus on other things at times, and that all Michael Jordan thought about was dominating and winning at the highest level. But I think even today, the only thing I disagreed with that statement, even from my main man, Mark Jackson, was that kind of inner battle that he created for himself, that's different. That's like alien-like. That's working in any generation, in any business. I mean, that made me want to be better at my job. Like, I just focused so hard today, and I had that adrenaline rush from watching the last two episodes.
Rich Kleiman with us. All right, I'm going to give you some takes. You fire back however you feel according to what I have to say about it, all right? Just some things I took out of the whole series. Number one, this was more entertainment than documentary, just because, yes, Michael had say over what was in it and what wasn't. But we didn't, you know, we heard about how hard he was on teammates. We didn't see a ton of it. We heard about his incredible competitive drive. We did see that. But the things that we saw were the things that Michael wanted us to see. And as somebody a few years older than you that lived through it, I wanted to see more of what I didn't know. I don't feel like I learned a lot that I didn't know.
Really? Yeah. Well, tell me what you saw that maybe someone else you think could have learned something from that you already knew.
Well, I mean, in talking to younger people who were more millennial and guys who were Gen Z who didn't get a chance to see this happen live, they learned about what the league was all about. So I lived through it. I kind of understood the majority of it. But I, in terms of things that I didn't really know, all right, I got some behind-the-scenes stuff. I knew that MJ was an incredibly competitive guy. I knew that it didn't take much to tick him off. I knew that he was one of the greatest winners of all time, and that's what he was always focused on. We had always heard that he was tough on teammates. I don't feel like I got, and I'm not knocking it. I'm just calling this more of entertainment. Like, for me, the best part was to be able to see him play again, and it wasn't just a couple of highlights. You know, reliving that through this was the best part. But I wanted to learn more about MJ, the person, behind the scenes, all that kind of stuff. And I don't feel like I know Michael Jordan any better than I did at the beginning of this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. There was no, like, shocking discovery. However,
I don't even need it to be scandalous. Don't get me wrong. I
know what you mean.
That.
I know what you mean.
I just want more of a view. I would, you know, since we went back to so many different aspects of it, the personal life was barely touched on outside of the death of his father and the illness of Gus and that kind of thing.
Well, so the Gus thing, I think we all had an idea of who that person was in his life. I thought that was a real moment that was touching to understand that relationship. I think that even the mom having a few, like, quotes and speaking at times throughout the 10 episodes and seeing his mom on the court after the sixth championship, that to me it was something we just never saw at all. Now, we got tiny, tiny, tiny doses of it. We didn't get anything, obviously, from his ex-wife, which makes sense. You didn't get a whole slew or family members, which makes sense. His kids spoke a little bit at the end, which I was cool with. I think that's representative of what he wants, like you said, and who he is. I think it was, you know, it was less of an expose, right? It was more of an expose than like breaking down or revealing something about him. But I think seeing him come to tears about his difference of opinion about like what it takes to win at all costs and his commitment to winning, that bringing him to tears almost. That wasn't something new, but I'd never seen it like that live. Hearing him talk about his teammates at times, hearing him talk about Phil, hearing him talk at the end about watching Jerry Reinsdorf, him confirming how he felt about Isaiah. I don't know, just all of it. I think it was just the amount of time we had gotten since that period in our lives, and now we get to see what we take for granted today, right? We get to see that footage would have been on Instagram, and we would have seen those interviews. I think it was that was just revealing to me. I don't know. Maybe you're right. You know, maybe there was nothing new, but it was plenty. I just think we all could have watched 30 of those.
Oh, listen, there's no doubt we were entertained by it. There's no question, and we would have been entertained by it at any time, let alone what's going on right now. Rich Kleiman with us, of course, with 35 Ventures, Kevin Durant's partner. A couple of other things. I know Jerry Krause is getting a lot of heat here. And he acted poorly in a lot of instances here. I think Phil was as much part of the breakup as Jerry Krause was, because Phil clearly didn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah.
Fair or unfair?
I'm going to say unfair, and I'll tell you why. I read Ramona Shelbourne's article today, and yep. I realized what ultimately was the issue. Jerry Krause did do an incredible job, and maybe people are not giving him as much credit as he deserves, because having star players, even the greatest player ever, there's challenges in putting the right team around that person, putting players that mesh with their style, that can take, in Michael's case, what goes on in practice and emotionally can play alongside of them. Like, you have to know, okay, Steve Kerr has the psyche to play with him. Scott Burrell, we should get this guy from the Hornets, young player out of Connecticut, because Michael's going to abuse him in practice, but he's going to take it. To be able to know those kind of guys and understand how to put role players around people, to get Dennis Rodman and have him buy in, even though that was probably more Phil, but to go get him and convince him to come over, he did his job. Where I think he messed up was Phil, when Phil didn't want to get in the middle of Jerry Krause and apparently what Michael and Scotty were doing when he was around the team, in my opinion, Phil knew the psyche of his team, and he clearly knew how to manage the different egos and the people. He probably figured if he tried to be a mediator between Jerry Krause and those guys, or stop those guys from doing what they needed to do or how they spoke to him, right or wrong, that would have affected what went on in the locker room. So it was Jerry Krause's job to separate himself from it. And I think his ego at that point couldn't do that because he couldn't have the rapport with Michael and Scotty that he wanted. He couldn't have the rapport with Phil that he wanted. And he wanted it. He wanted to be one of the guys. And when he couldn't have it, he used his platform of the media to say things that were volatile, that were, you know, he knew would be taken poorly by Michael. And then he caused the divide. And at that point, even like 82-0 statement, like you can't say something like that.
No.
And GM can't say that, period, right? Because if a player says something like that, you're flipping out. You're calling him into the office. So when the GM says that, who's not in the locker room every game, who's not on every road trip, who's not at every practice, he's not part of that like immediate family. He's close, but he's not a part of the immediate family. If that guy is saying things like that in the media, then you've caused a divide that can't be fixed. Now you're an outsider. And, you know, what was Phil going to do? Try to, like, lean on him or try to make peace with everybody? He was in a tough spot. And ultimately, if it was about winning and the job that Jerry Krause was going to do, he just had to accept the fact that he wasn't one of the guys with those guys and just, you know, and did his part and allowed them to keep playing and winning. And he shouldn't have been involved in making sure that didn't work. Now, that being said, Jerry Reinsdorf could have overruled it. He could have insisted that they bring everyone back. And when he finally seemed to come around to it, it was too late. Like, he waited until the end of the year.
I don't think Reinsdorf takes as much of a hit here as he should. He's the owner of the team.
Yeah, because you know why? Because he's here to explain himself, you know, and he's doing it in the right way. And, you know, and Jerry Krause, unfortunately, rest in peace, is not able to. But, you know, like I could imagine, like if Bob Myers, for instance, had a problem with Steph and Clay, and for whatever reason, they didn't want him around, and Steve Kerr insisted that everybody make peace of a situation, that's going to be uncomfortable. It would have, and in that instance, that's a Bob Myers' job or Leon Rose's job or Masai's job, whoever the GM is in that case, to say, you know what, right now I got to back off. I got to, you know, I'm putting my team together. Especially when you got Michael Jordan and Scotty and you're going for a three-peat, you know, you got to know how to read the room. And I think he tried to, at least from what I watched, get himself too close to the situation.
It's funny. I did read one tweet from Ron Harper today when somebody suggested Phil should have been more of a factor in that. That Harper said one time Phil did say something to Scotty and Michael, and it got worse. You know, that they were even worse on Krause after that. So I think Phil did exactly what you're talking about. He understands he can't lose Scotty and Michael.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Rich Kleiman with us. Rich, one or two more. Scotty never would have come back for the seventh. Because Scotty was that ridiculous contract was up. Reinsdorf never, ever, ever wanted to renegotiate it. Krause obviously was not helping in that regard. And at 32 years old, turning 33 before the next season begins, they're going to have the lockout. At some point, Scotty had to get paid. I don't think, clearly the Bulls were not giving him the long-term deal. I don't think he would have come back for a seventh.
I mean, I doubt it, too. I doubt it only because if you think about what he said earlier in the movie in somehow, you know, defending the contract he took or explaining the contract he took was that he wanted the commitment. And for someone that has that thought process, understandably, the right business decision in some cases to take the guaranteed money for a longer period of time, I couldn't imagine either that he's going to turn down 4 years. The thing is, he went to Houston, right? The other way of looking at it, though, then he went to Houston next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's not doing that, though, in my opinion, if Mike's still playing and playing for Chicago. So there's a part of me that feels like if the economics were a 1 year, I think Mike was making $30 million. Now, I don't know how they make this work. Maybe that means no Rodman. Maybe it's just Mike and Scotty and a whole new slew of role players. But if that was the case, and Scotty got 1 year big balloon payout, you know, then maybe there's a chance he does it. Except it's just not the same team at that point. But Mike and Scotty have a chance to win regardless. But ultimately, I agree with you. I don't think Scotty's turning down the guaranteed long-term money.
Rich Kleiman with us. I don't know how the whole pizza thing happened, Rich. I believe it 100%. I absolutely think he was food poisoned because, you know all the different theories that have been out there. But if you have food poisoning, it will do to you what it did to him. How does anybody let that pizza thing happen? How do five guys get up to the hotel room to deliver the pizza? Rich, logistically, how does any of that happen? And why are you ordering pizza in Utah?
Yeah. Oh, by the
Let's
show,
start there.
Oh, that's, you know what? Thank you for that one. I want to uncover the mere fact that nothing's open in Utah late at night except for a pizza place. That, to me, means code red. I'm not ordering pizza from that place. That is a Domino's pizza, if anything. Like, what else is it that's that time of night? Now, I agree with you. I don't know how five guys got up there. All that being said, I want to believe it because the story was incredible. And what that confirmed for me was the flu was less for me, I always thought, like, it's incredible that he played when he was sick, but playing with the flu, I was like, okay, well, you're Michael Jordan. You know, you get your hydration, you drink your Gatorade, you get out there, you feel horrible, you got the flu. I understand it's a bad flu, whatever he had, but I didn't fully get the same kind of agony that I instantly understood when you knew he had food poisoning and couldn't keep anything down. Now you all can relate to that one or two times in your life you felt that way. And I'm like, how did you even get on the bus?
Yeah, how did you get out of bed? Yeah.
He's sick. When I saw him get on the bus at the afterwards, I'm like, I'm surprised that he even walked on that bus. That's like an instant you get sick when you walk on one of those buses without food poisoning. But what I realized was that man was so sick. I didn't realize the footage you got to see showed you just how, I mean, he was white, chalk white, like Purdue said, I think, or whoever it was, Wennington, somebody that said it. He looked deathly ill. Like, he really, the body language was no acting, nothing. He looked like he was on his deathbed. So that scene to me just felt so much bigger. Like, the moment solidified just how incredible that was for me. But the whole scene seems frigazy.
You don't think it happened?
No, it obviously happened, but maybe.
No, but I mean, you don't think it was food poisoning. You think it was they go out and party or something?
What, you think a little cognac, a little cigar, some poker maybe?
Is he going to still feel that way that late in the day, the next day, at that juncture in his career? I mean, he's not an amateur at that point.
An OG. He's drinking cognac a minute before if he wants. Yes. You're right. That's why he got food poisoning. I think the story, you know, whatever, man. Everyone, you know.
I want to believe it, but I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. It is unbelievable to think that you would order pizza and somehow these five guys show up with a pie and end up actually getting to the floor of the team when it's the greatest show on earth. That doesn't happen.
Considering, like, I know what it's been like being with the Warriors during the finals in a hotel in Cleveland. Like, you're not walking in the hotel. There's security people. I mean, it's different. But
you can't even get to their floor.
No, and plus, I mean, well, now, you know, you have a hotel, you have to have the card and swipe in. Back then, they probably didn't have that, and definitely not in Utah. But who knows, man, you know, whatever Mike says.
Any final thoughts on it that you need to get out there? That you're just like, that just came out of it and just blew you away.
It just came not have an improvement way. Well, as a big Mark Jackson fan, and I love that 98 Pacer team, hearing him say that that was the toughest team he played, aside from probably the Pistons in his 16 years, was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Seeing Phil Jackson again really, like, solidified. You know, we all, as New Yorkers, had that, like,
bad feel. Yeah.
The situation with the Knicks. And also, you just didn't get to see him in action in New York the way Chicago and L.A. did. But to just see him and talk about that experience and realize what was going on, you just learned to really appreciate the coaching job he did. But it also just made me miss that era of my life, and that era of basketball was incredible.
No question. That, to me, is the same thing. And to get to relive it for 5 weeks was pretty awesome. That part of it for me, I didn't treat it as if this is all, you know, complete fact. It wasn't the complete story of everything, but I didn't need it to be. I just wanted it to be entertaining and, frankly, just to see Michael in his prime again. And we got to see that.
Man, when he does that fist pump after he hits that pull up, thinking game two in Utah, like business as usual, man, I had chills. Last night was one of those, you watch those 2 hours and you're not even speaking. You know, like the first four, you may check your phone, you're talking to people.
Yeah.
Last night I was locked in.
Totally agree. And I'll give you one last one. I had forgotten about it. The greatest pass I have ever seen is that Stockton full court pass to Malone. I mean, that was unbelievable.
Explain that to me. So who else referred to it as that? Was that in the doc? Someone said that too.
Somebody else said it. But I mean, that's I forget who it was. But that was three quarter court, and he had just kind of gotten it in his hand after the rebound. And it couldn't be more in step to Malone on the other end.
It was, yeah, but it's the moment, because it's not really right. The greatest pass you've ever seen, but it was the moment. One got the rebound, one dribble, three-quarter court, damn near full court, right in his hands, in stride for the bucket, but it was the moment, too. It's like, I get it. But it was, and it came from John Stockton. It's like the guy leads the NBA in assists by thousands to the second person, and that's his, like, that's his moment. That's his pass. And then so the greatest assist man has a pass in a big game like that. That's fair. I'll give you that. You can call it the greatest you've ever seen.
And my last one was just, I'm glad that they didn't go for a seventh, Rich, because I didn't, and I think this is part of the legacy, nobody ever took him down.
No, but, nah, man.
That may not be on his terms, but I'm glad it ended that way.
Yeah,
he may have wanted
to
be taken down, as he kind of said at the beginning. I'm glad it didn't happen.
I'm kind of with you, but I kind of also am like, I wish Washington didn't happen. And I would rather him play another year or two. And, you know, maybe Mike loses in the finals to someone, even though I don't even see it. But I just hated hearing him say he was still at peak form, you know, and that he felt like he was as good as he had ever been. Mm. Just sucks that, like, that man felt that way and we didn't get a chance to see some of it. And what I realized was, in his mind, he's still in peak form, you know, like the way he, like, the game could have been yesterday.
Rich, always great to talk to you, man. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Realize we're like pen pals, bro. We've never hung out, but we talk all the time.
Well, whenever it's socially acceptable again, maybe
we'll hang out
into one of those circles.
Entry on Showtime, Basketball County. It's only 51 minutes, not 10 hours. But
Basketball County on Showtime.
County on Showtime. It's a nice, fun watch. It's about Prince George's County in Maryland, where Kevin's from, and tons and tons of other WNBA and NBA players. And it's a great story of the county and their history with basketball. So nice watch. You'll enjoy it.
We'll check it out. Thanks, bud.
And I'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.